Coming up next on The Voice of America, the Learning English Programs as it is, words and their stories, and people in America. Thank you for listening to VOA.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Do you think what you do online is private?
If you use Facebook, your friends might have posted an update saying Facebook is not permitted to violate their privacy. The message says, "The content of my profile contains private information. The violation of my privacy is punishable by law."
But is it? Legal experts say that statement does not matter.
Kelly Jean Kelly wrote the following report, and Ashley Thompson brings it to us.
According to the website Snopes, the law just doesn't work that way. The website investigates commonly accepted information and tries to learn if it is true. Regan MacDonald is the European Policy Manager for a digital privacy rights group called Access. She agrees with Snopes. She says, users may be able to adjust how much control they have over their information and photos. But, she says, Facebook's terms of service clearly state the company mostly owns your data. Sean Murphy is the CEO of PrivateGiant.com. He aims to limit the ways online companies can use people's private information. Mr. Murphy says the way companies use people's information is creepy. He says, "Just recently, I was listening to a new streaming radio service. I had put in preliminary information just to log in, and one of the ads served up had my name. Sean is an IT guy, and that was super creepy. I deleted it and never wanted to use it again." Mr. Murphy says there are two kinds of online services. The first kind promises to guard your private data and never use it. But Mr. Murphy says that protection is going to cost you. That's their business model. They're marketing your privacy, he said. The second kind offers a huge number of services for free, like Facebook. But Mr. Murphy says users should ask themselves why the sites are giving so much away. They're grabbing your information, he says. From that perspective, if the service is free, you're the product, and you should be expected to be used as a product. Facebook's Terms of Service Agreement claims the license to use any data you post, including images. Matt Steinfeld is a spokesperson for Facebook. He pointed out that license is not the same as copyright. He says, "When you post content on Facebook or any information, you own that content. We have to have your legal permission to share that content. In other words, while you are a member of Facebook, you agree to let the company use your data. During that time, Facebook asserts the legal right to do almost anything it wants with your information. Mine it for details about you, use your images for marketing, or provide your data to advertisers. In fact, Selling data about you is a major source of revenue for the company. But if you delete information, you take it with you. Facebook has no further right to it. And Facebook spokesman Matt Steinfeld says, your specific identity is never shared. He told VOA, we show ads on Facebook without telling an advertiser who you are. The legal line between license and ownership can create unusual results. For example, lawyers for Facebook argue that parts of your data, the things you post, are trade secrets. Privacy expert Reagan McDonald says that idea is interesting. It means what is your personal data, what is supposed to be yours, Facebook is claiming intellectual property rights over, she says.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to the VOA Learning English program as it is. We will return with more on online privacy.
Facebook offers different layers of privacy. Users can select who can see and share their posts. Governments in some countries also offer additional protection about what Facebook can do with user information. For example, users in the European Union have the right to request that Facebook provide everything they have ever posted, said, or done on Facebook. That means people who want to leave Facebook permanently can keep all their data. Some governments are also discussing whether users should have the so-called right to be erased. In other words, users could ask for all their data and online activity to be permanently removed. Sean Murphy of Private Giant says users can also do something else to protect their privacy. But he says it's the thing nobody wants to do. That is, users can take the time and effort to read each company's terms of service agreements carefully before clicking on Agree. Mr. Murphy asks, take a look at the data retention. If you delete something, how long do they keep it? If they're vague and use weasel words, that's something you probably don't want to use. In the end, if you do not want Facebook using any of your personal contacts, private messages, or photographs, you have only one perfect choice: deleting your account. But Reagan McDonald from the privacy rights group Access says even that option is not good enough. She says people should not have to choose between participating in social networks and giving away all their privacy. Instead, she says, users and lawmakers should support legislation to limit online companies' practices and give users more control over personal data. I'm Ashley Thompson.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
You can visit our Facebook site or our website at learningenglish.voanews.com.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now VOA Special English presents a special program for New Year's Eve. That is a song millions of Americans will hear this New Year's Eve. It is called Auld Lang Syne. It is the traditional music played during the New Year's celebration. Auld Lang Syne is an old Scottish poem. It tells about the need to remember old friends. The words Auld Lang Syne mean old, long since. No one knows who wrote the poem first. However, a version by Scottish poet Robert Burns was published in 1796. The words and music we know today first appeared in a songbook 3 years later. The song is sung in the United States mainly on New Year's Eve. Here is Lou Rawls singing his version of it.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne? For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for auld lang syne. For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for auld lang syne.
Another version is by the Washington Saxophone Quartet. As we end our program with Auld Lang Syne, I would like to wish all of our radio friends a very happy New Year.
Thank you.
I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember with the special English program, People in America. Every week, we tell about someone important in the history of the United States. Today, we tell about writer F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Early in 1920, the American writer F. Scott Fitzgerald was poor and unknown. He was 24 years old. The girl he wanted to marry had rejected him. Her family said he could not support her. Later that same year, Fitzgerald's first novel, This Side of Paradise, was accepted for publication. He said that when the news arrived in the mail, "I left my job, I paid my debts, bought a suit of clothes, and woke in the morning to a world of promise." He quickly became rich and famous. That year before This Side of Paradise was published, he said he earned $800 by writing. The following year, with his first book published, he earned $18,000 by writing. Yet by the time F. Scott Fitzgerald died in 1940, at the age of 44, his money was gone, and so was his fame. Most people could not believe that he had not died years before. The problem was that he was so much a part of the age he described, the Roaring Twenties. So when the period ended, people thought he must have ended with it.
The 1920s began with high hopes. World War I, the war to end all wars, was over. The 20s ended with a huge drop in stock market prices that began the Great Depression. Fitzgerald was a representative of the years of fast living in between. The nation's values had changed. Many Americans were concerned mainly with having a good time. People broke the law by drinking alcohol. They danced to jazz music. Women wore short skirts. Money differences between one group of Americans and another had become sharper at the beginning of the 20th century. By the 1920s, many people believed that gaining the material things one desired could bring happiness. F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote about the lives of people who lived as if that were true.
There was more to Fitzgerald than a desire for material things. The test of a first-rate intelligence, he said, is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still have the ability to act. His two opposing ideas involved seeking happiness from material things and knowing that material things only brought unhappiness. Of his own time, he said, there seemed no question about what was going to happen. America was going on the greatest party in its history, and there was going to be plenty to tell about. Yet if he described only the party, his writings would have been forgotten when the party ended. All the stories that came into my head, he said, had a touch of unhappiness in them. The lovely young women in my stories were ruined. The diamond mountains exploded. In life, these things had not happened yet. But I was sure that living was not the careless business that people thought. Fitzgerald was able to experience the wild living of the period, yet write about its effect on people as though he were just an observer. That is a major reason his writings still are popular.
From
Francis Scott Key Fitzgerald was born in the middle western city of St. Paul, Minnesota. He grew up there. In his mother's family, there were southern landowners and politicians. The member of the family for whom he was named had written the words to the Star-Spangled Banner, America's national song. His father was a businessman who did not do well. Scott went to free public schools, and when he was 15, a costly private school where he learned how the rich lived. When F. Scott Fitzgerald was 17, he entered Princeton University.
Fitzgerald was not a good student. He spent more time writing for school plays and magazines at Princeton than studying. His poor record troubled him less than the fact that he was not a good enough athlete to be on the university's football team. University officials warned him he had to do better in his studies or he would be expelled. So he decided to leave the university after 3 years to join the United States Army. It was World War I, but the war ended before he saw active duty. He met his future wife while he was at one of the bases where he trained. The girl, Zelda Sayre, was a local beauty in the southern city of Montgomery, Alabama. She and Fitzgerald agreed to marry. Then she rejected him when her family said that Fitzgerald could not give her the life she expected.
Fitzgerald was crushed. He went to New York City in 1919 with two goals. One was to make a lot of money. The other was to win the girl he loved. He rewrote and completed a novel that he had started in college. The book, This Side of Paradise, was published in 1920. It was an immediate success. Fitzgerald told his publisher that he did not expect more than 20,000 copies of the book to be sold. The publisher laughed and said 5,000 copies of a first novel would be very good. Within 1 week, however, 20,000 copies of the book were sold. At 24, Fitzgerald was famous and rich. A week after the novel appeared, Scott and Zelda were married. F. Scott Fitzgerald had gained the two goals he had set for himself. At this point, the fairy tale should end with the expression, "They lived happily ever after." But that was not to be the ending for the Fitzgeralds.
Fitzgerald is reported to have said to his friend, the American writer Ernest Hemingway, "The very rich are different from you and me." Hemingway is reported to have answered, "Yes, they have more money." The exchange tells a great deal about each writer. Hemingway saw a democratic world where people were measured by their ability, not by what they owned. Fitzgerald saw the deep differences between groups of people that money creates. He decided to be among the rich. To do this, he sold short stories to magazines, and when he had time, continued to write novels. He also continued to live as though his life was one long party. For several years, he was successful at everything. Editors paid more for a story by Fitzgerald than by any other writer, and he sold everything he wrote. Some stories were very good. He wrote very fast, though, so some stories were bad. Even the bad ones, however, had a spirit and a life that belonged to Fitzgerald. As soon as he had enough good stories, he collected them in a book.
Fitzgerald quickly learned that a life of partying all the time did not help him write his best. But he could not give up the fun. Scott and Zelda lived in New York City. He drank too much. She spent too much money. He promised himself to live a less costly life. Always, however, he spent more than he earned from writing. In addition to the individual stories, two collections of his stories, Flappers and Philosophers and Tales of the Jazz Age, appeared in 1920 and 1922. A second novel, The Beautiful and Damned, also was published in 1922.
The novel was well received, but it was nothing like the success of his first novel. Fitzgerald was unhappy with the critics and unhappy with the money the book earned. He and his wife moved to France with their baby daughter. They made many friends among the Americans who had fled to Paris, but they failed to cut their living costs. Fitzgerald was always in debt. He owed money to his publisher and the man who helped to sell his writings. In his stories, he says repeatedly that no one can have everything. He seemed to try, though. It looked for a brief time like he might succeed.
Fitzgerald continued to be affected by the problems that would finally kill him, the drinking and the debts. Yet by 1925, his best novel, The Great Gatsby, was published. It is the story of a young man's search for his idea of love. It also is a story of what the young man must do to win that love before he discovers that it is not worth having. Next week, we shall discuss this important novel, and we shall tell you about the rest of Fitzgerald's short life.
This People in America program was written by Richard Thorman and Ron Davis. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week as we conclude the story of the life of writer F. Scott Fitzgerald in Special English on The Voice of America.